propagandists rediscovered their passion for equality. Some whose silence on the blatant discrimination practiced against blacks and women suddenly erupted in an expression of concern that the rights of whites and males were in jeopardy. Others who had spoken out against legal restrictions on equality decided that taking positive steps to end de facto inequality was going a bit too far. No one summed this up more succinctly than the Wall Street Journal. The essence of the open society of free individuals equal before the law, and this voice of capital is to judge actions by rules, not by particular results. What a pious, hypocritical statement. All manners of dangers were suddenly discovered in demands for specific targets in employment and school enrollment that would objectively demonstrate a commitment, you might say, a commitment to overcome discrimination. The supposedly liberal president of San Jose State University, John H. Bunzel, B-U-N-Z-E-L, says affirmative action is the worst form of condescension. It is also a distorted definition of equality. It carries with it the principle that in order to make some people equal, we must use the authority of the state to make others unequal. A Republican congressman from the state of Washington, Jack Cunningham, has suddenly shown extraordinary concern for Indian rights. He has called for a new federal policy, one which treats all citizens fairly and equally. Cunningham says that the USA has always been a country of equals, with no individual or group subjected to subordinate or special rights. Indians became U.S. citizens in 1924, said he. The time has come for this group to become full and equal citizens. Brave words, but let's listen now. When the bourgeoisie's political voices begin speaking about equality, it is time to listen carefully. How would Congressman Cunningham make sure that Indians became full and equal citizens? He has introduced the Native American Equal Opportunity Act. But the key provision in this legislation, in Cunningham's own words, would abrogate all treaties entered into by the United States with Indian tribes. It would absolutely nullify them and eliminate all treaties entered into with the USA and with the Indian tribes who are rightful owners of the land. You see, instead of the special status of Native Americans whereby a token measure of autonomy on their own lands is permitted, Indians will now become fully equal before the law. Naturally, in this process, any and all claims they may have under previously negotiated treaties to land with U.S. government and mineral rights, etc., would be immediately canceled. They will become equal with all other U.S. citizens, to be poor, to be in the ghetto on welfare, on dope and alcohol. One could go on indefinitely. Professors suddenly find that affirmative action creates racial typecasting. Others discover hidden dangers in the ethnic revival and find that all this emphasis on national, racial, and ethnic identity only goes to show this nation's retreat from its constitutional commitment to the ideal of equality. Previously silent libertarians bite their fingernails in anxiety over the equal protection and due process rights of whites and males. The philosophical underpinning for all this is the bourgeoisie conception, false conception of equality. Even affirmative action, by the way, as I said, has been killed, so they don't have to worry. Their white male chauvinism and racism has gotten the job done. The practical base for it is in the need of the bourgeoisie to maintain an actual state of inequality among the oppressed, both to guarantee profit levels and to make it more difficult for the oppressed, particularly white and minority workers, to unify in opposition to their common class enemy. This is why communists, Marxist-Leninists, do not idealize bourgeoisie democracy, and why they undertake to educate the workers to its true ulterior significance. By law, both the bourgeoisie and proletariat, which means workers, are equal classes. In fact, the one dominates the other. That's what the fact is. In order to change this state of affairs, in order to provide substantive democracy, substantive democracy, and genuine equality, the working class must turn the upside down. It must exercise political control over the bourgeoisie, take away its wealth and capital, the source of its misused fascist power, and prevent it from restoring the old order of things. Or to put it another way, the dictatorship of the proletariat is the great equalizer. And you must recognize it so. Until the working class has a dictating will, then monies of the bourgeoisie will continue to cause poverty, squalor, and hunger, which all the cat food in USA is presently being eaten mostly by white seniors, not to mention the black, Indian, and Asian seniors. And that bourgeoisie class exploits Africa and kills little children, destroys and slaughters in the name of their internal practices of capitalism and their so-called endowment they feel with the right to make capital off of even the blood of little children. Yes, there is only one way, through the armed struggle, not through revisionary methods of working within the parliamentary system or the electoral due process, because the due process is always serving those that are propertied. The rich manipulate the courts. They get the best lawyers. The poor have no defense. Only the shoddiest lawyer will take a case that has no money. And then he has to be made to take the case as a defense that is assigned by the state. We must recognize the importance of our struggle against the ruling class, the rightness of socialism that will lead down to the pure road of communism and the withering away of the state and all authority, because conscience will direct us and lead us on to that utopian day. I hope we can see some of that conscience in practice in this communal cooperative. Will you go out and work voluntarily? Will you show your inspiration? Because we'll be bringing up all those that did not tomorrow in this atmosphere of love where you were given a day off when we couldn't afford it. Please respond graciously. Maintain all of the place. Pick up things around you. Look after property and waste nothing. Because in doing so, you're cutting yourself off from greater opportunities. You can be living in paradise while the world is in hell if you will only realize you must participate in the saving and the working and the production here. Tell the children this in their classes. I love you very, very much.
Late last year, after he was put under permanent house arrest, as the US CIA does, it's a model practice in apartheid South Africa with the corporate monopoly capitalists of USA, have what is known permanent house arrest, and you never leave your home until you die. But Woods managed to escape. Woods has written also Biko, Paddington Press, about the great black consciousness leader, movement leader, who was killed, assassinated in detention at the hands of the torturing South African police. And he has also toured, Donald Woods, the newspaper editor, has toured Western nations, urging the strongest international intervention, short of war, to compel the white racist minority regime to come to its senses and accept majority black rule, where black people outnumber whites 20-some to 1, 40-some there, rather. What is required, he says, is total ostracism, cut off totally from the fascist, corrupt, apartheid Union of South African regime that's upheld by U.S. monopoly capital, finance capitalism. You must withdraw all economic, cultural, sports, and diplomatic contact. A silver-haired liberal and fifth-generation South African, Donald Woods, 44 years of age, says he is making his appeal to the conscience and good sense of the West. But he warns his generally conservative fat cat audiences that Western governments must act quickly or lose out to the East. He himself is a capitalist. He's speaking merely practical terms, pragmatic terms. He said young urban blacks aren't looking to the West. He says they think Andy Young is far too moderate, and one Russian Kalashnikov rifle is a lot more substantial than the Carter administration slapping the fascist Western government lightly on the wrist. My audiences don't like to hear it, but I will tell them frankly that if the Cubans marched into South Africa today, blacks would greet them with open arms and participate in the overthrow of the racist regime. Editor of the East London Daily Dispatch for 12 years and a nationally syndicated columnist, Woods has warned that the express train of white racism is now rushing at full speed on a collision course with the express train of black anger. He predicted an escalation, that means a stepping up, of fighting on South Africa's borders and growing internal violence that will lead to an outright racial war within 3 years. When things get really bad, Prime Minister Voerster will do a deal with the wrong people, maybe someone like Zulu or Chief Buthelezi, but it will be like Smith's internal settlement in Rhodesia, which doesn't stand a snowball's chance in hell of succeeding. There seems to be a rule for white minority leaders in Southern Africa to wait too long, do too little, and do it with the wrong person. All right, that's just a little bit of the insight of further news. I wanted to add one other thing, that Carter is having a devil of a predicament on how to get a tough line policy in Africa, because by his own admission, the Soviet Union are helping all the right causes. In Mozambique, in Angola, in Ethiopia, all black people of the world are in sympathy with those causes. And so he has to be very indirect, using the CIA, sneaking methods, as he's now sneaking aids into Savimba, the right-wing, rather narrow nationalist that is supporting. He's fascist, really, because he works with the Union of South Africa. And so Carter, through the CIA, is sneaking help and to resist Angola, and he can't come out frontally. Also, there's an unpopularity for war. U.S. whites won't fight them, and Carter is afraid to trust black people in fighting wars where there are black people. He has publicly said he is afraid to trust them. All right, now we'll begin the television presentation of my speech in the convention center with the sellout Nation of Islam, and then thereafter, Clute, which is just a movie, an ordinary movie. Thereafter, tonight, Little Big Man with Dustin Hoffman, which tells a tragic, true story of the American native in U.S. society. Thank you. Beginning now.